We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Thank you for listening to Spin, the Rally Pod, brought to you by Dirtfish Rally School. For your chance to experience life behind the wheel of a rally car, head to drive.dirtfish.com to find the course that's right for you. What are you waiting for? We're right here waiting for you.
Well, hello, Dirtfish Rally friends. It's that time of the week again. It's Spin the Rally Pod. Oh, dearie me, we've had a lot to digest, haven't we, in the last 8 or 10 days or so. It's been quite tumultuous. Tumultuous, David Evans. It's been tumultuous.
That's a good word. Just to be clear, Cole, we are actually recording this podcast now, are we? That's happening, is it? We're not just talking. We're now recording.
So.
Is George,
really
George, are you there still?
I am still here. I'm very happy to be here. Basically just suppressing the laughter because we have been laughing for the last 5 minutes whilst we're trying to get ourselves organised for this.
Yeah, this is what happens when you know there's no Lisa to look after us. But the other big thing that Lisa normally does, David, is she's normally got a plan. What's the plan for this Spin the Rally Pod?
Yep. No, I have a plan. The plan was to record the podcast tomorrow. So that was the initial plan. That's clearly gone out the window. So it's fine. I can ad lib a little bit. What are we talking about again?
Rallying.
The review of the year. No, that's right. Right, well, I'll tell you what, let's start at the top. Why don't we start at the top? Why don't we start with Cali Rovanpera? We haven't spoken to Georgie yet about the big news.
Shocking.
George, shocking. Is it?
Yeah, I was shocked. I was shocked and a bit disappointed, I'll be honest.
Just to fill in, the big news obviously is Cali Rovanpera only doing part season next year.
Going part time, so he's only doing it part time for a year. I mean, first of all, you know, this is rallying, and we respect everything in rally. Rally's all about just getting out there and doing things and being great. So I totally respect whatever Cali wants to do, and I know I love the fact that Seb Loeb, you know, won nine years in a row, and Seb Loeb he stopped early and. You know, you respect everything like that, but I just don't understand. I'd love to just sit and chew the fat with Cali Rovanpera and understand quite why he's doing it, but it's entirely not my business, so he can crack on. And I did think about it a little bit, which is probably even more than we should do, because it's not our business, it's his business, and that's what we are in rally. We're all about, like I said, but I'm just thinking myself, you know, he's been in a rally car, like, constantly, since he was 9 years old. And, you know, maybe he feels a little bit at this point, you know, he's still a young man, and he's been thrust into this incredible atmosphere. Now, when I think back to when I was 17, 18, I don't think I'd have managed anything, you know, anything like as well as he's done. It's been a phenomenal effort, and he must have had quite a lot of stewardship from his dad, from friends, from the environment he was in. He's maybe just actually wanting to go away and live a little bit of his own life and,
totally.
You know, become more of his own person. And that's kind of what I'm thinking for him. Now, I mean, I don't want to be, you know, it's not our business to really say it, but we are in the business of, he's in a public forum, you know, so we're allowed to say a little bit as long as it's respectful. And this is very respectful. You know, I would just say to him, you know, Cali, you crack on. It doesn't matter how long you go away for. If you go away for 1 year or 2 years, when you come back, you will be commanding a massive salary. So don't you worry about it, mate. Your lifetime earnings will be safe. And you know, because the guy's quite clearly one of our sports magicians, and that's how I like to call these guys. You know, I've been quite eloquent about the way drivers behave Seb Loeb was a magician. Seb Ogier was a magician. Tommy Mäkinen was a magician. I think Juha Kankinen was a magician. And I think Bjorn Waldegard was a magician, because these guys mastered events or whole series in their own way. And Kalle Rovanperä is quite clearly one of those magicians. And I think it's fabulous. So brilliant, you know. Good on him for taking
totally
the time.
Agree with you, George.
Go and live your own life. Do
live
what you
your
want.
Own life.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
enough,
it's you know,
me, yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. I think that's exactly what he's doing. And you know, he is in a very fortunate position where he has managed to create this time in his career where he can make these decisions. Mm. And there's maybe a touch of rebellion, because exactly as you said, George, you know, it's been very much dictated for him where he's going, where his next step is, what he's got to do from a very, very early age. And he's just saying, whoa, hang on a minute. I'm the 2-time world champion. I'm going to make some decisions now. I'm going to make some decisions, and
Aye.
This is my decision. And I think it's a fantastic thing for him to do. And I don't think it's great for the sport.
I love it.
I think for the sport.
Well, I think it's good for the sport.
I don't think it is, George.
Okay.
I don't think it is. I think it looks awful.
Okay.
I think it looks awful.
Yeah, but Colin, are you just to jump in here? Are you, Colin, talking about it's not good for the championship and for the wider view of the championship, or are you talking about good for the sport? Because I think there is a difference.
Okay, and you are more intelligent than I will ever be, David Evanson. I don't understand. Difference there.
As I was saying, I was thinking, what is the difference? I'm not entirely sure. But it's a fair point, isn't it? That, you know, as WRC promoter, I'm not going out and shouting from the rooftops, our 2-time world champion, you're not going to see him everywhere next year because he's going to go and drive his Toyota Starlet in national rallies in Finland, or he's going to go and just hang out with his buddies in Jyväskylä or Monaco or wherever. It's not ideal. And, you know, I get the sense that certainly if Max Verstappen turned round to Christian Horner and said, do you know what, Christian, I've been thinking about next year. I think I might just take half the year off. I'll just do 12 of those 24 if it's all the same. No chance. Mm. Not a hope. Firstly, Christian Horner wouldn't stand for it. Secondly, Red Bull wouldn't. Mm. Thirdly, F1. Would the whole of the Formula One management wouldn't stand for it? It just wouldn't happen.
I totally agree. No, I think you're right. But from when I say it, I don't think it's good for the sport. You know, we've been through a fairly difficult 8 months or so, haven't we? You know, it started in Portugal with Thierry Neuville saying, well, hang on a minute. You know, this sport's not going the right way. You know, we need to look at ourselves. We need a deep look at what's going on, how we sell ourselves, how we project ourselves, what we're trying to be to a younger audience. And you have to say, not a lot has happened. You know, there's a lot of still simmering discontent out there in terms of what we do, how we do it. And actually, there's a very, very good article on Dirtfish this week comparing drifting with the WRC in terms of how we sell ourselves to younger people. Go back to that. Have a look. Have a little read of that if you haven't read that already on dirtfish.com. You know, that's still there. And the fact that a 23-year-old, our biggest asset, and there is no question he's our biggest asset. You know, you saw him at the Formula One event in Abu Dhabi at the weekend. And, yeah, he wasn't quite the superstar that Max Verstappen is. But, you know, people wanted to be seen with Kalle Rovanperä. You know, people wanted to be associated with him. And you could see that. He's got star appeal. And do you know what? We ain't got that many right now who have got star appeal. So there is no question it's bad for our sport. Absolutely no question. On top of the fact that, as I say, there are other questions being asked about how we're going forward with the sport. And it's just, you combine the two or three or four elements there, and it becomes a little worrying for me. It really does, the fact that he's just said, no, I've had enough. But, you know, if you look at the positive side, well, maybe a recharged Kalle Rovanperä, if he does come back in 2025, and we're assuming he will, you know, maybe that's a good thing.
He has to. Contractually, he said he has to.
Contractually, he has to.
Yeah.
Right, okay. Right.
Yeah, he said, he himself said, I have a multi-year contract. This is only for next year. He's very, very clear on that.
Right, okay.
That he will be back.
I find that a little interesting.
Full-time.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's great to hear. I read that.
I think he'll be really happy to come back, guys. I genuinely believe he'll be happy to come back. Whatever shortcomings our sport might be perceived to have at the moment, it is still rally, and it is still... It is still the god of all motorsports. in our view. You know, it really is. Mm. It's the pinnacle of driving skill. You know, I disagree with you about Formula One. You know, if Max Verstappen stopped, he can be replaced by any one of 20 drivers. They'll do just as well as he does in that car. You know.
No, my point was with him, though, George. Slightly controversial. So
that's not controversial at all.
My point was, George, that he simply, as a reigning world champion,
wouldn't be allowed to.
God, yeah. It's going to be one of those. Yeah. He wouldn't be allowed. moving on. Not quite moving on, but another interesting view on this is from Sebastien Ogier, 8-time world champion who did 13 straight full-time seasons. And he talked to Dirtfish and said he saw Kelly's decision as courageous. Yeah. Which I think is, you know, we've kind of covered that. Yeah. It's exactly right. You know, the easy thing to do is just keep doing what you're doing. And he's decided, nah, you know, I want to do something different. So good on him.
So what happens, Bush? Yeah, what happens? Here's what surprises me. What happens if he goes? Now, I did ask him. I asked him in Japan about testing a Formula One car. And the look on his face was interesting. I'm not saying he has got a test for a Formula One car, but he didn't 100% deny it, but I don't know whether he looked at me and went, are you nuts? Or he looked at me and went, who told you? I'm not quite sure what the look was.
I have no vision of this at all, other than the fact that I can see this look thinking, Colin's really gone off the tree this time, hasn't he? He's gone off the deep end this time, Colin.
Yeah, possibly. But let's just run with it. Let's run with that thought that maybe he does test a Formula One car. And what if he gets in that car and he is super quick, super, super quick, and thinks, whoa, I absolutely love this. I love this. And they give him
Red Bull will give him Max Verstappen's drive in 2025. And
maybe
Max
can
have a year off. It's perfect. Oh. Max can move across the rally. It's perfect.
A driver swap.
There we go.
That'd be exciting.
But we saw this, Colin. We have seen this before. And in fairness, Sebastian Loeb did jump in a Red Bull. Or was it was a Toro Rosso, wasn't it, back in the day?
Yeah,
and he was quicker than...
Quickly, yeah.
Whoever it was, Scott Speed, Sebastian Bourdais, I can't remember whoever the driver was. And F1 didn't give him a super license. He was supposed to race in Abu Dhabi, wasn't he?
That's right.
I think somebody got a wee bit upset about it, didn't they?
The fact that he was so quick.
So I
think, you know, the difference there is that Loeb was at the sort of twilight of his career, I guess. Whereas now, Kelly would still be just about a young guy going into Formula One, so you never know.
Yeah.
Stranger thing.
I suspect that Kelly's not actually looking for anything like that now. I'd like to think that he's just going to go away and have some fun. You know, Colin, you've speculated about it very, very clearly, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think he just wants to go and just be himself. Just you know, he can maybe have 8, 9, 10 weeks off. You know, who knows? Maybe after 3 months he'll be thinking, actually, I've done enough now. I think I'll go back to my sport now. Thanks very much.
Mm-hmm.
And he can maybe pick up the mantle. Toyota have already said they can run 4 cars on occasions when they want to, so he can lift the game a little bit. You know, I wouldn't necessarily rule out that option. And I think if I was Toyota, I would find the way to generate that option if he did say he wanted to do an extra couple of events or ready to come back, whatever. You know, he's just a young man finding his way. It's great.
I put all of this to numerous members of the senior management at Toyota when we first found out about this. And like Sebastien Ogier said, you know, your first reaction is, what? And it's absolute shock. You know, you can't believe it. So I called around the team and spoke to people. And the overwhelming feeling with this was, we have to do this. We have to be sensible here because he wants to take a break. It's been pretty intense, 10, 15 years. If we don't give him this break now, what happens? He becomes thoroughly burned out. If we hold him to his contract, at the end of next year, he could walk away altogether. And that, so to my mind, they've actually been incredibly sensible.
Let's not forget just how unique he is. You know, he's been plumped into a rally car at a very young age. You know, every kid's dream, you know, every Finnish kid's dream is to drive a rally car. So he's been living the dream, and presumably at various points, like everything, it gets to be hard work and it stops being a dream. And, you know, he's maybe think, you know, he's not fallen out of love with it, but it's not the be all and end all for him. So, yeah, take some time off, go away and figure it out. Maybe he won't come back, or maybe he'll just come back and see out his contract. But that's
just to be clear again, contractually, he will be back in 2025. Sorry. Yes.
Yes. Right. Well, this is what we've been told, David. This is what we're being told. And we have to believe that. Listen, guys, can I have one last thought, George? Or not?
Of course you can. Yeah.
Thanks,
I'm not the boss. No, please do. Please do.
No. I just wonder whether we are being a little bit just too positive, too...
Accepting
of this. You know, is it really just, oh, he's just a young lad, he's burnt out? You know,
oh, no, Colin's been thinking.
Well, I think this comes back to my earlier comment about not being invasive. It's not for us to speculate beyond anything positive, and I don't think it's.
Why is it not for us to do that?
Speculate
I don't
on
get
anything
that.
More. Well, I just don't think it's. I mean, I think it's not what we do. You know, we have to be positive about our. I mean, well, I don't. Maybe we don't. I mean, are,
right?
Are
can
we
I?
The, are we the news I, of the I, world? Or
I have demonstrated, you know? I am a man with a plan, and right. I've sent you all the plan on the WhatsApp.
Colin,
so I'm now going to bridge. George, be quiet. I'm now going to bridge into the first point of the plan, which is a 10-point plan we've got to get through in the next however long. Not very long.
50 minutes. Yeah.
Calais, he came into this year, and this is going to relate to the first point. He came into this year on the back of a load of personal strife that he talked about but didn't talk about. He then talked extensively about how much he enjoys drifting, how much he enjoys the stuff. You know, when we were with him in Finland, Cole, to talk about, you know, just driving around town, getting an ice cream, just doing stuff that you did as a 15, 16, 17-year-old, he didn't do that. That's what he wants to do. There's no conspiracy. There's nothing in this for me. And, you know, we know Calais. We know Harry well. We all do. And for me, there is nothing in this other than a young fella who is jaded, absolutely grateful for what he's got, but he wants to keep doing it. And he's reinvesting in himself right now or next year for the long-term benefit. So... that is the final point on that.
Okay.
And it leads into this question of why did Calais find, and I was quite surprised at this, he talked extensively when he won the championship, this was a lot harder than last year. So why do we think that was?
Mm. Go on, George.
Everyone raised their game, of course, and we can see that people raised their game. But also,
who
I think
raised
he
the
took
game,
a
George?
Measured approach.
No, whoa. Who raised the game?
I think Elfin raised his game.
Yeah.
Elfin's the only one.
I seconded.
Categorically. I mean, okay, I think you could say, I mean, as soon as this is going to end up to be, I think Thierry just did what Thierry does, which is go utterly brilliantly, but have little unnecessary dramas or slow starts. I didn't see any change in that at all, particularly. Maybe I'm a wee bit wrong.
I'd go along with that.
Ott Tanak, I think Ott did what Ott does as well. Yeah, go ridiculously quick and then say that the car's not good enough, which is actually what he did as well, actually. It's maybe a fair point, but I don't think he didn't demonstrate any level of stewardship to lift the team. But he got Calais got a good run from Elfin, and Elfin has lifted the game massively this year. Tiny increments, but it's a massive result. And what he has demonstrated is, generally speaking, a fabulous level of reliability, which is, again, probably just about typical for him in reality. The odd mistake now and again. I mean, his mistake in Central Europe was very inexpensive in one way. You know, like in terms of the car, it was nothing. But in terms of the effect on his championship, of course, it was the end. But
His shunt in Portugal was fairly pricey all round.
It was very pricey all round indeed. Yeah, I mean, there was a few more of those, but you know, he's lifted the game. So, but I think that Calais looked and said, you know, the 2022 was phenomenal. He just went out and blitzed everything, and I suspect, you know, at the start of it, you know, he was able to do that because he was probably thinking, well, I'm going to see how it goes, and not really think about the championship. And then all of a sudden, you know, by the time you get into 4 months, he's already, you know, blitzing away with it, and well, I'll just keep doing what I'm doing until I trip up. And he never tripped up. You know, he just kept going and going and going. It was fabulous. Yeah. This year, he took a more measured approach. And I think it's, you know, it's a psychological thing. Also, that we know he obviously had some degree of turmoil in his life. So I think it all just adds up. You know, rallying is all about having command of your emotions, of all your faculties, and a car that does exactly what you want. So I think he had a car that did exactly what he wanted most of the time, but not all of the time. So he took the measured approach. Yeah, I think he was in command of all his faculties. I think mentally he was maybe not just as carefree as he had been the year before, but he understood that. And again, his level of understanding of the sport and his tutelage to bring him to this point has said, right, if I'm not just 100% happy, let's just stage this. It's a numbers game. There's a lot in this championship. I do want to be a double world champion. So takes the measured approach in that first part of the year. And yeah, it would feel harder. I mean, it was. I think 2022 was far from easy, but you know, he did get that great run, didn't he? So
he did. I agree with that.
I think it's as simple as that. Yeah.
Yeah. I just think it might be a little simpler. I think that he adapted to these new cars quicker than anyone, and that I think is in part due to the fact that he didn't have. You know, you look at obviously Neuville. How many years? 10 seasons in a top level car. Tanak's got to be similar. Elvin's not far short of that. You know, these guys who are absolutely 100% tuned into the top level cars. Robin Perra only a few seasons ago came from Rally 2 cars. You know, he is more used to the majority of his career he spent having to, as you say, George, he's a magician, having to work out the way the car works and adapt his driving style, maybe minutely, rather than relying on changes to the car, where the others, as Elvin's quite openly said, you know, in the previous generation of rally cars, he had a myriad of choices he could make if things weren't quite right. These cars are so different. I think last year that, you know, it was Calle Rovanperä who actually got into those cars and thought, yeah, I can drive these cars. And he could drive them perhaps better than anyone else, you know, and he adapted more quickly. And that is perhaps part of the reason why he felt it was a little bit easier. The others were always playing catch-up. Well, I think, as you've rightly said, the others have caught up this year, and that's why it's been a little different. That, throw the personal turmoil in and the fact that, you know, the desire, the hunger to win the first championship at the age he was at, you know, that drives you on, doesn't it? You know, that definitely helps.
It does. I would modify what I've said about Thierry already, seeing as we've sort of covered Thierry and Ott in my first sentence. But I would say that Thierry, even more so than any year previously, he is capable of that blinding speed and generally speaking, you know, it's not 100% reliability, but he still has these little hiccups in his performances and getting, you know, out the starting box, out the gate quickly. But my God, once he gets into that groove, I think he's even faster than he's been before. I mean, he is, you know,
that's not enough for Neuville.
No, it clearly isn't. It clearly isn't. But he's, you know, so he has improved that aspect of himself. But that's not where he needs to improve it, because he was already brilliant there. He's still not cracked this out the starting gate business, has he?
He did in some places. He did. He definitely had better Friday mornings in some places. But for me, Thierry,
it was quicker. Yeah,
there was a good start, a reasonable start, but then there was just Croatia, and you know, I think everybody in Hyundai is forgiven. For what went on in Croatia, because nobody's mind could have been on the job. And I think perhaps now, just briefly, while we talk a little bit about this, it is worth just perhaps remembering and just reminding ourselves that, you know, the absolute tragedy that hit in just before Croatia with Craig Breen, and the way we've said that we could talk chapter and verse, and I'm sure we will, and we have to again about Craig himself. And there's some stay tuned to dirtfish.com. There is some really interesting news about Craig and moving forward and everything coming on the website, so coming this week. So have a look back at the website for that story. But I think credit where it's due, Hyundai went through that incredibly difficult time. And Colin, you know, we were at the funeral. We saw the team there, and they were in bits. They were on their knees, weren't they? And it was the same in Croatia. And to pick a professional organisation up, I think credit to Cyril Abitbol for what he did to bring them together, and to drivers like Thierry and EP, Tamu and Danny, of course, to quite literally rally around and get back at it. You know, that it's not an easy job, that, is it?
Far from it, David. You know, the most difficult job you can imagine for a driver, you know, to be put into that kind of situation is awful for the whole team. Yeah, difficult, isn't it? It is really difficult. And yeah, how did you follow that and you be critical? I'd like to be a little bit more critical of Thierry, but I'm not going to be now, David.
Sorry. No, I mean, you can be. But, you know, he said he wanted to go out and win Croatia for Craig, and he was leading, and it was a tiny mistake. And it feels just a bit harsh to have a go in for Croatia. You know, if he'd won that, the season would have looked different. And, okay, you know, what happened in Safari happened. But Thierry said towards the end of this season, you know, he went through his results, and he could really kind of rationalise, and it's not, you know, the whole what-if game. There was definite, if this had just gone the other way, if this had just... And it didn't take a lot for him to be a genuine challenger, and I do think this was one of his stronger years, and I think learned. And
No, sorry, David, I'm interrupting you. It's very rude of me. He has learned, and I'm sure he has learned, but your Abitbol was actually quite... He was upset on Friday evening when we talked to him in Japan, because he absolutely understood that rally was for the taking again for them. Neuville was the man in the ascendancy on Friday afternoon in that rally. And my goodness me, you know, if they want to win one rally a year and it's not Monte Carlo or maybe not Finland, it is that rally. It's Japan. They want to go to Japan again and give one to Toyota on their, literally, in their backyard. And it was there for the taking.
It's
and the
very point, rude, the, isn't it? It's very rude, Colin.
But, George, that's what you know that's what it's about, George. But you know that's what it's about.
Of course it is.
That is what it's about.
I'm merely being flippant, sorry.
But here's the thing, and a bit about, and it's something that I've talked about before, you know, and Chris Meek was guilty of this. You know, the best champions, the guys who can convert potential into championship-winning form and win championships, actually win them, are the guys who, at the critical moments, tend to make the right decisions. They make the right choices about where to push. They make the right choices about where the risk is too great. They make the right choices about, you know, how to look after the car in the right circumstances. They make decisions, and they make correct decisions. In a split second, they make the right decisions. Neuville and Abitbol said this, not me, Neuville is developing a habit of making the wrong decisions at the critical moment. And that's a worry. And his decision on Friday afternoon in Japan was madness. Was complete and utter madness. It was brain fade. You know, he hadn't
been through that stage at full speed, had he, in the morning?
George, David, I mean, that doesn't matter. You know, he had, the red mist had descended almost. He thought, I've got this one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, there's no question. It didn't matter about the speed. He absolutely judged it wrong. He got it wrong. He had the whole weekend to get past Evans, and he didn't. He decided he was going to pass him in that stage, and he was carrying into the first corner that you could see the corner. You could see around the corner and through it practically. You know, he's carrying 10, 15 kilometres an hour too much speed. No, that's not good enough. And that's what he needs to work on. If he continues, forget Friday mornings. He can cope with that. And we've seen that. He wins rallies, you know, with this lack of ultimate pace. Yeah. You know, if he continues to make, at the critical moments, the wrong decisions, he will never be world champion. Never. It won't happen. Because, you know, next year, as we've seen, you've got Elvin Evans building his ability. You've got Ott Tanak with, you know, the biggest kind of bit between his teeth. He's got a massive chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove the whole world wrong and be champion next year. It is absolutely essential that Thierry Neuville starts to make, at the right time, at the critical time, the right decisions. And if he continues to make these mistakes based on, you know, on the wrong decisions, he ain't going to win the championship.
All rallying, one source. By now, you know that dirtfish.com is the place to go for all of your rallying news. But when it's time to try your hand behind the wheel, just join us here at Dirtfish Rally School, nestled in the Cascade Mountains in Snoqualmie, Washington. Whether you're a pro seeking extra seat time or a novice looking to get started, We've got programs tailored to all rallying needs. And when you want to watch the best in the world, just head over to our YouTube channel. Our coverage of the WRC and American rallying is second to none. Follow us at Dirtfish Rally across all social media platforms and shop the latest looks in our merchandise store now. As always, rally on.
I think you're right, Cole. I think you're exactly right. Yeah, but I would say is, yes, he took a lot of time out of Elvin in that first stage of the afternoon. And, yeah, the speed was too much. I'm going to try and defend him. You know, there was that compression that chucked the car and blah, blah, blah. But now you're right. And I think what you just said about what Chris said, what Meek said, and what others have said, it is about making that right choice at the right time. And Thierry needs, crucially, nobody can doubt his speed. And at times his consistency is great, but he just, like you say, it's those pivotal moments. And the trouble is that's instinctive. And if your instinct's wrong, then are you going to be world champion? It's tricky.
David, how's your plan going?
Plan is great. Hang on a sec.
Plan is good. I can tell you the plan. Elfin getting better and better. We've done that. Taka. Let's talk about Taka.
Oh, yeah.
Not mediocre year, but not the massive build on what we saw last year. We saw great progression last year, didn't we? And I kind of thought, wow, this is it.
We talked about him winning. You didn't see it huge there. I saw it huge, David. That was huge for me.
Through this year?
This year's been tough, but that's good. A tough year it makes you stronger. I mean, and that happens.
But it's
never a linear curve of excellence. There's always little hiccups.
Let me finish my point. Having had a bit of a go at Taka for a bit of a mediocre year, I did want to say Japan is the biggest shot in the arm he'll ever have.
Oh, yeah.
And he will take that away, take it into next year, look at Monte Carlo and think, yeah, bring it. I've got you now. And he'll win it.
Yeah. A linear curve of excellence. I've written that down. I've got to use that somewhere else.
<right now. laughs>
I didn't see it coming. I 100% did not see Japan coming because he's been so mediocre this year, you know, and he's really struggled for confidence.
Listen to the podcast that I'm on. I've been saying how it's all about, it all just eventually starts to gel. It's all about experience. It's all about
But it hasn't really gelled
building.
This year.
No, but that's okay.
George, it gelled
even
last
though it
year.
Hasn't, even though it hasn't, that still makes you stronger. It's all part of the learning. And I know from our perspective, from everyone's perspective, it just looks like, you know, he's going nowhere and he's not doing it. His safari performances were awful. An absolute joke. I mean, he just about destroyed the whole team there, you know, with destroying parts on the car. But somehow it does make you, you know, he's realised he's an intelligent lad and he's figured it out and he's put it together, trying to find that magic place. This was the first time he demonstrated getting into that magical place, that perfect groove where you are the pace setter. That is the first time he's ever achieved
that. What was the difference, George? How did that work? You know, fine, it's a home rally, blah, blah, blah. Lots of people waving the flags and you feel comfortable at home. Is it that much of a difference?
Well, I mean, rallying, I mean, driving these cars at that speed is not just about driving skill. It's the whole, I mean, like, we know it so well. All our listeners know it so well. It's the whole package. It's getting yourself in exactly the right place. You are on, you know, if you compare it to surfing, you're on the crest of that wave. You're not in that curve, in that wave. What you are, you're balanced on a rally car. You know, you're up there on the tip of the wave where it's just starting to break over the top. You're up there on top of that wave riding that. That's how edgy rally is. It's just out there in the impossible place. And he's put himself out there for the first time. How he's managed to do it? Speculate. Yes, home advantage mentally, right? But I would have thought that could have worked completely in the reverse. It could have pressured him beyond all belief. Maybe Akio Toyoda took him aside before the rally start and said, actually, you know Taka, you're really not cracking it. You need to actually show something really special here, mate, or we're going to shift you. And you know what, whatever's happened anyway, he's come good. And he's delivered big time. And I just love the fact he's done it. Always reckoned he had the ability to do it. But having the technical ability is nothing. It's being able to put together the mental well-being, the strength, getting all your faculties, all your abilities lined up and letting yourself go to get into, because, you know, to get onto the crest of that wave is almost impossible. You know, you imagine if you can picture my analogy, there's no way to get up there on that wave, you know, there is no way, but yet our guys do it. And he's somehow managed to get himself. How he's managed it, I don't know, but he has, and that's great.
Yeah, and George,
you know, he knows what it's like now, so he can repeat it.
You know, with your analogy, if we continue the analogy about the waves, he's been on top of that wave a number of times this year. He's tried, he's forced himself. You and I could be on top of the wave, David, for a nanosecond, and we'd crash straight off it, you know. And that's kind of where Tack has been this year, and he's a real confidence driver, and he's tried to push that pace from that safe, and we know he's got a really comfortable safe pace. It's not spectacular at all. It's a sixth, seventh position type pace. And he's tried to push that a number of times this year, and it's gone wrong for him. And that is why it was a surprise to me that he managed to put together that consistent pace, that real consistent pace in such challenging conditions. Because, you know, when conditions are predictable,
really
when they're predictable, when they're dry, you know, that is the time you would expect a driver to push, to find that little bit extra, to, as you say, to start riding that wave, George. But there were such
Monte Carlo levels
conditions
of difficulty there, wasn't it?
Oh, real difficulty.
Do you know what I was really impressed with, Colin, was his accident on that stage, first proper stage. The fact was he survived it. That was smart. Do you know people
he was
people
really
that
smart
used to crash like that? Do you know, Carlos Sainz could survive anything. He could. You know, Carlos Sainz very rarely retired from an accident. It would be the third or fourth accident that he would retire from. He was unbelievable in his survivability. And I'm not saying that Taka actually had very much decision in where he was going to go there. I don't think he did. But he survived it. And, you know, that's a knack. I mean, I'm not going to say it's a skill. I'm going to call it a knack. Some people can survive.
It's true that, though, isn't it? Because you think back to Carlos and, you know, those huge roles that he had in Australia. Well, kept going.
Yeah. You know what?
Just putting it to first and not even stopping, you know. Incredible.
That spot where those boys went off on that.
He's a good package.
He is. You know, that spot where they went off, you know. For Mo showed us some video that he took 15 minutes after he'd crashed, and it was a river flowing down the road across brand new tarmac. You know, they were accelerating up, and it was almost impossible. And you're right, you know, Taka did something. Taka would have been more or less on the same line, the same sort of unmanageable speed, and it wasn't very quick. It really wasn't very quick, but unmanageable. No steering, no braking, the car just kept going. But he did something. He did something to save his car that the other two failed to do. You know, and it made his rally, didn't it? So yeah, it's interesting. It'd be really good to talk to him. But it was good. It was a rally-winning performance, wasn't it? And the first time he's shown that. Can he do more of it next year? There's more pressure on him.
It'll come in increments, Colin. Yeah, I mean, the pressure's good. I mean, I would suggest that Taka can take any amount of pressure and deal with it. If he can deal with that at home, okay, you've got a home advantage, you've got the crowds behind you, yes. The pressure must have been immense, Colin. The pressure must have been immense.
But George, I heard him swear. He swore for the first time at the end of the rally. I've never heard him swear, ever. You know, and it was almost as if he turned around and said, you know, I've been talking about, you know, the fact that I can win this rally, and a lot of people thought I was talking bullshit, but I've proved them wrong. So there was definitely a different side to Taka in that rally. It was kind of, you know, I'm going to go out and I'm going to show you that I can do it.
And that's helped him. That's got him into whatever's happened there. It's got him into that perfect place.
Yeah, exactly.
But we've never, like you said, Cole, we've never seen that from him. That's the killer instinct, isn't it? That's that, right, stand aside, I'm coming through. Which, you know, you've never doubted with the likes of Tanak and Ogier and Neville. But we've never, ever seen a hint of that from Taka. No. We need to get into him next year, Cole. Poke him. Okay. Prod him.
I'm going to put a tenner on the nose of Taka to be world champion next year. Surely I can get fantastic odds on that. Surely, yeah, I'm surely I can get 100 to 1 or something like that.
So you can get an each way bet. Can you get an each way on the championship?
I don't want an each way. I want all or nothing on the nose, Colin. The nose.
Yeah. I'll have a tenner's worth of that, George.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Yeah, let's go all in.
No, for me, get through Monty next year. If he's on the podium next year in Monty, then he's up and running. Genuinely, I think we'll see him winning rallies.
Yeah.
Particularly somewhere like Latvia, where we've never been before. Mm. I'm guessing that probably Callie will be back because Callie would know Latvia reasonably well from when he started. Brand new event.
One of his faves. Yeah.
A super quick one. You could see how many. Yeah. Right, moving on.
Moving on.
Hang on a sec.
Moving on, David. Moving on to the plan, David. You know, we covered Toyota.
Unbeatable next year, Cole.
Is that right? Is Toyota unbeatable next year?
Yeah, totally beatable.
No, they're totally beatable.
Unbeatable.
They're as vulnerable as they've been in 4 years, 5 years. Yeah. I think there are questions. There are questions being asked that haven't been asked before. You know, is Elvin Evans capable of leading the team? Is he capable of being world champion? Because he's their bet. I would say 100%, but there are others who would argue against it. Is Takasan a full-time...
They're wrong, Carl.
They are wrong. I think they are wrong, David. But you know, is Takasan a full-time manufacturer point-scoring driver? You know, there are questions. Borderline. There are questions Borderline. For the first time.
Just well, getting there, let's see.
Just getting there. Just getting there, but good
just,
enough.
Just getting there now, yeah.
I think a lot of it depends, doesn't it, on what... Because it's a big step to go from where Tack has been this year as a third driver on selected events, and actually not that many events, because in the end, Ogier did something like 8 rallies, so he definitely did the lion's share. He took the sort of burden of that third car. Mm-hmm. To move Tacker up to a second full-time driver is a lot.
It's a different dynamic, isn't it? It's a different dynamic.
Well, it is, Cole, because you've got Ogier and you've got Akele coming in wanting to show the world. It's places like Portugal, Sardinia, Greece, hot gravel rallies. They want to say, right, look at this. I'm going to show you from 7th or 8th on the road. I'm going to absolutely slaughter everybody. Mm-hmm. And if they put the car off the road not trying to prove a point, but trying to demonstrate what they can do, then that's your third car gone.
Yeah.
Bringing way more pressure immediately to Tacker. So, mm-hmm. I agree. They're beatable. I might have said they were unbeatable. I disagree with myself. I think they're beatable. Eminently beatable.
Yeah, totally.
Am I? Thanks, man.
And that's what Cyril said. You're allowed to, David. I argue with myself very often and end up losing the debate.
Is Cyril beatable? Is Cyril beatable?
Beatable.
So let's move on. Hyundai's got a lot better this year. How has Hyundai done that? Is that fair? Has Hyundai got a lot better?
Well, they've only won 2 rallies, David, or 3. How many did they win?
No.
2. 2 rallies. They won 2. They won 4 last year with a dog of a car. So, I mean, how do you measure getting better?
Yeah, that was just a talking point, obviously.
Do you know what? I've got to say this. I've got to say this again,
guys. It wasn't a dog of a car. It wasn't a dog of a car.
David, it wasn't. George, it was.
No, just because the driver certainly was called it a dog, first half it wasn't a dog.
It was a pig.
It turned the corner very, very quickly.
Woof, bloody woof. It was a dog.
No, it didn't turn any corners to start with, George. That was the trouble. It couldn't turn corners and it could barely go in a straight line. It was a shocker.
Yes, it was.
It was in Monte Carlo. That thing was an absolute hound of a thing, wasn't it?
And, it was.
It would be cruel to speculate as to why that was, but they quite clearly got it fixed. This year it seems to be a lot more drivable, but okay, there was more competition out there. They only had one driver capable of winning events, really, because...
I think EP could have won in that mid-year bit.
It looked like he could, but he didn't, you know? He kept making the little mistakes just when he could. I'll forgive him the mistakes. I'm not criticising him at all. I'd like to think he's grown, but he's not getting a full year again next year, which he seems to be quite happy with. Which is a shame because I think maybe he could have delivered, but they've got Ott next year, so the expectation is that Ott is going to give them the complete golf club set, really. You know, that's them. They've got their 14 clubs in the bag now, haven't they?
How many do you have in a bank normally?
I was just trying to work that out as well. Is that right? I'd be astonished if George Donaldson knows. Is that correct?
You have nine of the little irony things. I don't know why. But then you have they have the sand wedge and the pitching wedge.
Oh, stop it. Stop.
That's 9, 10, 11.
Let's not get into the detail of golf. Mm. Because this is rallying.
Isn't it 15?
I was expecting to be hounded for that analogy. You know, we'll go back to the surfing analogy. They've got their big wave board out. They've got you know, they've got the big long boards out now.
Yeah, listen, I mean, what do we think about Oit? I mean, dearie me, he was as prickly as we've ever seen him in Japan.
Why was that, Colin? Why was that?
I don't know why, George. I really don't know why. I mean, listen, I'll forgive him being rude, and it is rude to the likes of me. I don't mind. I've been around long enough, and I understand drivers. But Seb Marshall is...
I'd be rude to you.
You all the time, and I've got a thick skin. I can handle these things. But Seb Marshall is the nicest guy in the world. Seb Marshall is so inoffensive. It's actually a little bit of an issue he's so inoffensive. He just can't be offensive to anyone. And Tanak was just downright rude to him. Downright rude, uncalled for, unnecessary, and absolutely unjustifiably rude.
What did he say?
He accused him of making up stories. And okay, now there was... I had a little chat with someone in Tanak's camp afterwards, and not saying this is unacceptable, because Tanak can do what he likes, and he's quite clearly proven that over the years. He can do, he can say, he can behave how he likes. But I said that, you know, that was a little bit over the top, really. You know, you can't really do that sort of thing. And, you know, just on a purely human basis, you can't do that sort of thing. You know, you just can't
well,
behave towards
some,
other people like
evidence.
That.
I mean...
Yeah.
Well, you know.
So, but the
Seb Marshall is not somebody who makes up stories.
Correct.
You know, in his position as working for WRC promoter.
What was the story that was supposedly made up? The listeners and myself are now fascinated.
The story was that he was actually trying to fight for a position. That was the story.
I remember that.
So there was then a supposed half-hearted apology at the next stage, and you had to look very deep into what Tanak said to actually think this is an apology. But I just wonder how you go from that really edgy sort of mental state, and that's what it is, you know, to being a championship contender in 6 or 7 weeks' time in Monte Carlo. How would you do that, George? How would you go from that, from one extreme to the other?
Well, I don't think Ott's very complex at all. I think he's one of the more straightforward drivers. Yes, his commentary can be a little bit abrasive at times, very frequently, in fact. The off the cuff ad lib put down to everyone he possibly can is apparent. And you know, I don't think it's particularly big. Sometimes it's fabulously funny. Sometimes it comes across unfortunate. But I think him in a car, it won't make any difference to him. He'll get into that car, one very determined young man, and he will make that car go. Whether he's got the intelligence for a good strategy, you know, whether he can manage a strategy within that mindset and manage the tactics for an event would be debatable.
I'm Kellen Koshel, and I just did my first Dirtfish course, which was the one-day women's course. My biggest surprise was how calm it could be in the car, and the calmer I was, the faster I could make the car go. The surprising thing about driving was that it wasn't necessarily a mental thing. I had to really get out of my head and into my body more, and I just felt a little more comfortable doing that for the first time around a group of women. But I will say, I do feel like I could do any of the Dirtfish courses now. I kind of know what to expect, and you know, hopefully more women get into motorsports, and then any day could be an all-women's day if just enough of us are in the sport. If I were talking to someone who was thinking about taking a class, but was kind of on the fence, it would be, you know, what are you waiting for? It's such a fun experience. You're gonna really learn something, and you're gonna push your limits, and maybe you'll even have some more confidence.
Oit Tanak, absolutely no problem. He will have gone home, he will have forgotten everything about this year, every aspect of whatever's been going on. He will be 100% focused on Monty, and he'll come and he'll win that rally. He is so single-minded, so absolutely focused on what he's doing. And that's the issue. He doesn't care about Seb Marshall. He doesn't care about anybody apart from... And, you know, you've got to... For me, that's the mark of a champion in some ways, that you are. So, you know, you look at the likes of Senna and these kind of people, they are unbelievably focused on what they're doing. And if that's to the detriment of personal character traits or whatever, then so be it. So be it. You know, I think part of the problem for us all is that we knew Tanak very, very well from the time when he was coming up, and he was working his way through the ranks, and he is a great guy. Of course, he's still a great guy, but his priorities have changed, and it's clearly brought a change. I'm not sure he'd say a change in his personality, but it's certainly a change in his outlook. And for me, you know, in some ways, I actually like it because it's a challenge. You know, and it's the same challenge that we don't get enough of. And we've talked about this, Carl, and George as well. That at the end of the stage, you want edgy people who are good. You have to be on your mettle to get the question right. And he's that guy. And if you're not, then bang, right back at you. And it's great. It's straight out of the Richard Burns, the Carlos Sainz, Colin McRae, these kind of people. You know, we have Chris Meek, another one. Get your question right. And if you don't, then... Don't be at the stop line.
No. But
equally, I think Tanak's taken that to a whole new level.
He has. And he's taken it. You know, Adamo's another one. You know, Adamo, you had to really think about the questions that you asked him. And, you know, if you asked a silly question...
And Andrea could be rude. He could be enormously rude at times.
He could. He really could. But then if you did get the question right, then he had the grace, to give you... Yeah, he gave you the right answer. Yeah, he was... Do you know what? And I'm arguing with myself here in my head as I'm saying this. Tanak is actually quite similar. You know, we got some very, very good responses out of Tanak at the end of Japan, but it did require the right sort of question. Maybe they are. I think Tanak learned from his time with Adamo. I know he did.
Exactly, Cole.
He did.
And they were very close, and they are very close.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tanak saw when Andrea did those one-word answers and killed the interview dead. Tanak watched that, and he was like, I can do that. And he does.
Yeah, he does.
So,
it's
good.
It's not personal,
bring
is it? It's just, I am focused
Maybe
on my driving. Everything else a distraction. If I can have a pound of flesh on the way, I'll take it, you know, sort of thing.
But George
definitely knows what he's doing.
He
knows what he's doing.
It's all part of the winning culture.
No, he does.
Absolutely,
He does. George, I've got a question for you. Right. It is the
this
night
is all part of the plan,
before.
By the way.
Yeah, it's part of the plan. I may not have listed this in the plan.
No, it's not on the plan. It's the night.
It's the night before shakedown in Monte. You've got Neville and you've got Tanak in front of you.
Yeah.
What are you going to say to them?
Let's go for dinner. Let's go for dinner, guys. I'm taking it. First of all, get in my car. We're going across to Italy. We're going to go up to San Romolo.
We're going to have
dinner in the nice restaurant up there with.
Was it called Dalava?
Dalava. We're going to have dinner with. David. The motocross.
Davide.
Champion.
Yeah.
David. He just got his call. David, actually. He goes by David. But anyway, we'll have dinner with him and we will talk about the rally and we will talk about friends. Guys, this is a rally. It's quite clear. It's Monte. Crap loads can happen here. The key is survival. Let's just get a nice clean event. There's no need for team orders on Monte because it always sorts itself out anyway. You know, I've never ever, I don't think in all my career, I can remember anybody fighting on Monte inside one team. Unless you go back to Lancia, where you had Fiorio standing in front of Bjorn Waldegard in his Stratos to stop him going, stupid things like that. But you know, I don't think it's going to be an issue on Monte. But guys, you know, I need you to come away from here with points on the table. So let's measure this one, and that happened this year. You know, we had a lot of people just measuring. It was quite a few events before anybody had a trip. I think, was it not Elfin that had the first trip, I think, pretty well this year? Or one of the early ones, anyway.
Yeah.
So it's a question of, you know, let's just get that on the table and then we can start to push. And honestly, guys, I would say, look, the Toyota rationale stands here. I'm not keen on team orders. I don't want to apply them. I'm not precluding the possibility how that manifests itself, but I'll have you buy, and you will all have equal support from the team, because anything less is foolhardy. It almost is a shame to even mention it here because it's so obvious. We are here to win. We will win as a team and we will win as individuals. Yes, there can only be one world champion. I want it to be one of you two. So I need you both to be in that position at all times. Yeah. There will be a tie decider. If you like, I'll put it in a I'll put it in a brown envelope, and I'll put it in my desk at work in a locked drawer, and it'll sit there. And if there's a tie decider, there it is there. I'll have it notarized and sealed. There you go. If that's what it comes to. Yep. And, George, and I will I will enforce that by
is that
whatever
work?
Means I need to. I will enforce that by whatever means I need to. Yep, there you go.
That's mega right, Cole. Will that work? Yeah, is that enough?
Will it work? I don't know. I don't know because I think it starts off, George. I'm sorry to criticize you, George, because I agree with 99.9% of what you say sometimes.
I think it starts off
on the wrong premise. I think you started off with the driver's title. If I'm Cyril Abitibol, the first thing I'm making clear at the start
I said we want to be world champions, and we want you to be one of the world champions. But I meant the team, Colin.
Well, but that's not what you said.
Well, you've got to be clearer than that, George. Sorry. In the messaging, you've got to be clearer than that over the record.
I didn't make that clear. It's always the manufacturers. Always the manufacturers.
I think that's where he needs to start, is that, you know, there is one priority this year. There is one priority, you know, manufacturers. And if one of you ends up being the world champion while we win the manufacturers, fine. But I absolutely think he needs to take a leaf out of Adamo's book, and he needs to reserve the right to employ tactics, and he needs to reserve the right to employ priorities, all of those things. And they need to accept that that's the case. You know, I'd have to say that Thierry Neuville, when the news broke about Tanak, Neuville was very quick to start talking about manufacturers. They need to be a team player. They need to be, you know, there to support the team. The team is number one. And I think he needs to just be really quite hard with both those drivers at the start of the year. And you know, we will see tactics. We will see him employing team orders in places where it's necessary. And the third driver will come into those tactics and team orders as well. If he doesn't, they won't win.
Team orders are, generally speaking, it's generally speaking a very nice position to be in when you might want to have to think about doing that sort of thing, because it is ultimately is fairly crap to do it, because there's a winner and a loser in that scenario. So if you wanted to modify my comments a little bit, you might say that look guys, it's we're here for the manufacturers' championship. The drivers is the bonus. We will support you 100% to be drivers' champion as well, because it's all a plus for us. But you need to support me for this, and then I'll support you for that. Quid pro quo, yeah. And you know, one of them will succeed, and one of them will fail. The one that fails doesn't get the support towards the finishing post at the end of the year. That's it. Can you imagine if that was Ott Tanak at the end of the year? I don't think it would be much difference. Either of them would be miserable. You really don't want to have to apply team orders, because it is destructive to the team. It's destructive to the drivers, because, you know, you're needing them in that special place where they can go really, really fast. The last thing in the world you want is team orders. And the last thing you want to do is apply it. Anybody that thinks otherwise is honestly inexperienced.
George, it's only destructive if the drivers don't understand the situation that they're in. You know, if the drivers understand right from the outset, this is what it's about, then it's not destructive.
This is interesting, Colin.
It's a tool that gets the team to where they've got to go.
You're assuming that the drivers aren't selfish.
So is the way to deal with this not to follow Toyota's lead and just say there are no team orders, because there's no complications there at all?
I think that's kind of the way you'd want to do it. So that's your, to my mind, that's your premise. But Ultimately, right. you maybe just want to reserve the right to do something sensible at some point, because the knowledge that both of your drivers are capable of, you know, probably behaving quite foolishly and costing you a manufacturer's championship, you might have to reserve it. I think Toyota are extremely brave, but they've also had an incredible lineup that's flattered them and not cost them. I mean, I've been in teams where, the catastrophic results come along and present themselves. You know, I mean, actually Toyota have had that too, but it hasn't affected a championship. But it can do it. So I think you need to reserve the right. Hell, you know, the manufacturer is paying for everything, including those fabulous driver salaries. Those absolutely fabulous driver salaries. I'm paying you a lot of money. I know you want to be world champion, but without my money, it's not happening. End of. This is easy equation. But you don't want to wheel that over the guys.
There is a part of me that does wonder, next year, will Toyota's policy change? Because quite possibly it will have to. You know, they are going to have Ogier and Calais in fantastic positions on the road, and Elvin is probably potentially going to need some help in the championship. And we're all... absolutely all up for this idea that there's no team orders, but sometimes you have to be sensible.
It's a skewed perspective. It's no longer a level playing field. That if I was FIA,
really,
I would be introducing an emergency regulation very, very quickly to address that issue.
I've been thinking about that.
This is a unique position.
This driver's coming back and winning rallies.
I would seriously look at the option to which I think it's probably
already there. But how can you regulate against it?
You don't want to regulate against it. If people want to do it, then that's fine. But I would reserve the right to seed
penalize
on leg one
yeah,
according to a perceived level of performance. To stop.
That's difficult.
It's just a regulation. You can make it as, if somebody says that's unfair, that's unjust, that's targeting me, well, it's too bad. It's for the good of the championship.
Yeah.
End of. You know, the Group B cars were banned because they were perceived to be dangerous. I don't think all of them were, but generally speaking, it was accepted, and the rules changed all of a sudden. Bang, done. So you can change these rules. It might be perceived I would look for a change
I'm agreeing with you again. I mean, you know, this whole thing about, you know, for the good of the championship, you know, we look at regulations and think it's about equity and all the rest. Well, you know, at the end of the day, regulations have to be, they're multifaceted. They are about equity, that's quite clear, and about compliance and all of that, but it's also about the health of the championship. And we look back to the situation in Estonia, which was just a farce, a complete farce. Our biggest draw card, you know, starts the rally 5 minutes down because of a regulation that doesn't really need to be penalising. Didn't need to be penalising, you know.
Yep.
It really
didn't.
And we turned around and said, well, this needs to change, because why do we shoot ourselves in the foot? You know, why as a championship would we shoot ourselves in the foot? To George's argument, I kind of agree with him. You know, I mean, it doesn't look good for the championship. If, you know, Ogier cherry picks the rallies, he comes back on the same as Robin Perra. And, you know, these are drivers who can win, as Ogier has proved many, many times. First on the road, 2 days running, back in 2000 and whenever it was, 15 or 16, 14, 15, 16. You know, he can win from anywhere. But it just looks silly when they come back and they win, as you said earlier on, David, by miles. They come to Portugal, they win by miles.
Yep.
It looks silly. Is it good for the championship? Well, some might say it's not bad for the championship. You know, it's great to see these guys coming back and winning. Yeah. But I would say it is bad for the championship. And anything that's bad for the championship that has a solution, that has a potential solution, the FIA should look at. They should look at it. No question about it.
Yeah.
I'm with you, George. Start a campaign. I'm behind you.
I would look at something like that. You know, I thought about it a little bit, and I can think of four or five ways of doing it, but just the simplest is best. And FIA, I'll be fair, I think WRC regulations are pretty good at the moment. I don't like the way that rallies are designed at the moment, or the way that they're particularly run, but I think the FIA's regulations are okay. You know, they work. You know, they're good. Who would want to be making regulations? It's not exactly fun. But I think they're a pretty good set of regulations, and I believe they've got the latitude to do what they need to. They could probably even do it within the current regulations. If you look hard enough, there's probably a way to maintain sporting equity. It's probably in the, sporting code that they could actually just do it, and the stewards could just decide, here's the start order. Bang.
Yeah.
You know?
I hate to say it, and I don't know why I've sort of taken this over call a little bit, so apologies for that, but we're on our way over the hour. Oh, we're not way
We're
over the hour.
Never.
Indeed.
We're over.
We haven't even mentioned M Sport.
And well, I think we make this a two-parter. I think we put a line in the sand here, and we say this is the first bit done, and then next time we can, if somebody actually makes a plan, we can do a bit of WRC 2, and we can talk a bit about some other stuff.
Can I reveal to the viewers what I would like to talk about?
Indeed. Maybe listeners as well.
Listeners. It's all the same. Yes, but you're right, of course. What I would like to talk about is the fact that so many drivers have done amazing performances this year, and just a quick sort of, you know, point scoring, go through the driver's name and a point score for them and a quick justification. Ooh. Not my normal.
Oh, I hate that, George. I get into such trouble with all that. Oh, I hate it.
I know, but you know, maybe not. But you know, like Adrian Formo, for me, he's had a fantastic year. Growth year, he's had his problems, and even again going out in Japan early, I mean, I was utterly broken for him for all of 30 seconds, and I thought, okay, that will make him massively stronger, and I was hoping that it wouldn't have any horrible effect on his career, and I believe that M Sport realised they've got a bit of a gem there, a man that could come very, very good and become
so
someone.
Save special. This for the next podcast then, George.
Yes,
so, but exactly. Do we have to do homework?
I've got about. No, you don't. It could, because it's all in you already. Just speak how you feel on the day.
Right.
Because
I like that idea.
You know, we've talked about Taka being
and have
EWRC
open in front
and,
of you
and how he growed. Yep.
Yeah.
Don't need any.
Can
no,
we also
no
talk about the Roger Albert Clark?
Hey? We can talk about that because that's been fantastic. Is it actually finished yet, or are they still driving?
He's going on for about another week.
Where did that Stratos finish? Where did that... I have
it
never...
It went off on the last stage.
What happened?
What?
Unbelievable. Literally, as we put a story up that I wrote about how amazing it was to see a Stratos out there again with some brilliant quotes from Cesare Fiorio and Marco Allen. Literally, as the boys press send, Seb Perez went off.
Oh, no.
Ridiculous. We've been a complete curse. We talked about Oliver Solberg, how well he was going to go. We talked about Chris Meek, how well he was going to go. We talked about a Stratos. None of them. No one finished.
But well, listen, that's Stratos.
When I heard that Oliver stopped, I was furious with their team manager, Phil, because he should have been changing drive shafts every day. What was he thinking about?
Let's save this again. And I would say this is the last Roger Albert Clark rally that we miss. We can't miss this again. We've got to go next time. We've just got to. Whatever meetings, whatever nonsense we've got, we've got to put it all to one side or take it with us. Right.
And go and do it.
So, well, I'll make a bit of a note here and then forget it next time we start the podcast. So, if we could all try and remember this stuff.
I've got then it. It's very simple. It's very simple. Drivers.
Drivers. All right. See, I'm writing it down now.
Drivers and M Sport, basically.
Right. Got that.
And a few other characters and teams that I want to mention as well. So, there you are.
Good. I can't wait. Do you know what, boys? It's got light. It's got light while I've been sitting out here. I'm now looking for this bloody brown snake. Jeez.
Just to explain, Colin is not in the UK. He's on the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And tell us a story, Colt, about your Airbnb.
Up in the Alpine region, doing a few bits and pieces with the Alpine...
Where's the Alpine region?
It's Victoria.
Where
the world's third oldest rally is held. Did you know that?
North of Sydney? Is it?
No, it's kind of southwest of Sydney. Southwest of Sydney. So it's Victoria.
Isn't that Melbourne then?
Down that sort of way, but it's in the Alpine region. Right. It's about 4 hours from there. But we got a message at this Airbnb saying, look, everything's there for you. Everything's ready for you. But just be aware that the last couple of days, a brown snake has been spotted on the drive and in the lawn. A brown snake. World's second deadliest snake.
They're not. I don't think that. You have nothing to worry about. Don't you remember the Aussie Man review of that bloke? The old fella who dealt with
it. The old fella. Was that not a brown snake? On his way for his pint with Barbara that he couldn't miss.
I don't know this story.
If you're easily offended, whatever you do, don't go to Aussie Man Reviews. But if you like a bit of a giggle and you don't mind some expletives, George, don't do it while we're recording. Please don't make any of that noise.
I'm holding back.
Anyway.
Good. Well, providing Carl avoids the brown snake. What?
Surely it's too cold up there in the Alpine region for brown snakes. They're just telling you that to stop you walking on the grass. It doesn't like the grass being walked on.
No. Honestly, no. There's plenty of them. Apparently, there's a bit of an outbreak this year. Apparently, the weather conditions have been perfect for them, so there's loads of them. Anyway, there we go. Not to worry.
Get down the hardware store and buy a machete, Colin. You cut their heads off.
Yes.
You can't do that.
Or if you're in America, you can buy a gun and shoot them.
But don't do that either.
Don't do that.
No.
On the downside, Colin, it's still raining at home.
Great.
If you're interested.
Not really interested. No. And it's cold at home, apparently. Oh, well. Guys, man, well, listen.
Snow's coming on Thursday. Very exciting. Oh. Anyway, enough. Let's stop talking. I've got some typing to do. And same time next week,
boys. We'll see you there.
Thank you, gents.
It's been a joy.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.